Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pro Wrestling Flashback. It is October the 26th, and we are going to be talking about WCW 1996. This is the part three of WCW 1996, because this is a very, very extended year that we need to go through. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I'm Sinbad. Of course, I'm joined by Couture. How you doing, Couture?
I'm doing fine.
Awesome. Yeah, I had... But right before we went off the air, I was like, hey, Couture, I'll be back in just 1 minute. And then, like, I picked up my phone real fast, and I heard the blog talk lady say, like, 3, 2, 1. Well, I guess I can't say anything to Couture. So, all right. So here we are, man. When we last left off, I believe it was Slamboree, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Slamboree.
Yeah, Slamboree. And now we are at the end of May, and what we know is that Ric Flair and Arn Anderson have challenged Steve McMichael to pick a tag team partner to wrestle them at the Great American Bash. And they've kind of been three horsemen for a while because Brian Pillman obviously flew the coop, you know. So now that they're the three horsemen, the two of them, Ric Flair and Arn Anderson, challenged Steve Mongo McMichael to a match, and he picked Kevin Green, who was just in that year's Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, he was in that year's Super Bowl.
Yeah, so that's what we know right now going into the show. Nitro the next night, they had Eric Bischoff and Bobby Heenan do the commentary for the show, which is odd because they normally had Mongo McMichael, but they actually did it without him for the first time. Because it was, you know, he's now going to be a wrestler, supposedly. So
thank
you had,
God.
Yeah, you didn't know. that's so true, man. Yes, exactly. Thank God that, you know, Mongo was no longer the announcer. And this just means nothing but good things for WCW, because Steve McMichael was an addition to the Nitro broadcast because they wanted to add something different. But if you guys remember... you know, the people that watched Monday Night Raw, which, of course, we'll get there when we do WWF. But Monday Night Raw, when they first started, they tried out new different announcers, too. And when you do that and you bring someone from the outside, it never works. It never really works, with the exception of maybe Don West and TNA. But that took him years to get good. But, I mean, like, no one else
Raw
besides
had,
that really
Raw,
worked.
Raw had Rob Bartlett from, like, Don Imus' show. And those first Raws. And... he was okay. He was funny, but...
but, I mean, it still didn't work.
Yeah.
All right, so we're at Nitro. The Steiners, who are now back, wrestle Scott Norton and Ice Train to double count out. And that's, like, a fun little tag mini feud that we're going to see, because the Steiners were, like, big guys, and so were... Scott Norton and Ice Train. Ice Train was obviously still very green at this time, even though he'd been around forever. But he still was just like a mediocre worker. But Scott Norton teaming up with him, because Scott Norton was great. So Scott Norton being his partner kind of added to the team. I always liked every team with Scott Norton, even with Mark Bagwell. I just really always liked Scott Norton. I don't know if you're a fan of this.
Yeah, I like Scott Norton. He's like the most... just the way he was built, he was just fucking scary.
He was terrifying. Just a giant man. Did they ever make a Scott Norton figure? Like, did they ever make a wrestling figure for Scott Norton? Like the classic series or anything?
I have no idea. I bet like one of those I bet you, like, one of those ringside collectibles or something has got one figure. They have figures of everyone.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure they had, you know, one of him. But, I mean, it's just, it was just crazy because, yeah, he was such a terrifying guy. I was always shocked, but I guess because of all the whole politics crap, that they never really did anything with the guy. But, you know, whatever. All
right, he's one of those guys that I could see legit beating legit beating anybody. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
Even today, like, I have him on my Facebook, and he's still a giant. I mean, he's huge, just, you know, just awesome. And we had Ric Flair beat Eddie Guerrero, and this was really odd because they gave him a lot of time.
Yeah, 20 minutes.
Eddie Guerrero was getting like not necessarily a big push, but they were treating him more like a... like an actual, you know, mid-carder as opposed to a jobber like he kind of was before.
Yeah, he was being featured a lot.
Yes, it was because Ric Flair had beat him the night before because Arn Anderson turned on Eddie Guerrero in the Battle Bowl. So Eddie Guerrero was trying to get his revenge and, you know, he beat him with a figure four because a woman cheated to help him. And it was just, I don't know, it was just, you know, good stuff.
Yeah.
And then Flair did, you know, an interview talking about the whole Stephen Michael and Kevin Green, how he's not scared at all and all that stuff. And
Randy Savage is barred from the building at this time.
Yes.
Because he's crazy.
Yeah. Because he's insane. They had another tag match. The tag champion Sting and Luger beat Megan the Barbarian. And this is another one of those matches that it was so awesome how, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, the tag team division in WCW was way better than anything. I mean, I can't even remember a company ever have a better tag team division than this era of WCW. I mean, can you honestly think of anything?
Maybe WWF in, like, the mid to late 80s, they had just a, you know, they had the Survivor Series with all the tag teams and stuff like that. They had a really good tag team division. But, yeah, this was an awesome tag team division in 1996.
But the thing about that, the late 80s WWF, not all those teams were ever treated as contenders.
Yeah, you had,
teams. Like, on the top, and then everybody else was just kind of, like, bouncing around. And this one, it was all contenders. I mean, you could have had, like, even if they would have given Scott Norton and Ice Train the titles, like, it wouldn't have been that big of a shock because it was, you know, they were a big, bad team, you know? I don't know. I really liked it.
And everybody was wrestling everybody at this time, you know, heels against baby faces. I mean, heels against heels, baby faces against baby faces. You didn't get that in the 80s.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's why WCW was, you know, growing where it was right now because of this, like, innovative stuff.
Yeah.
DDP beat Brad Armstrong with a diamond cutter. And DDP had won the Lord of the Ring title. And,
yeah.
But they said he had cheated. Because, and then Gene Okerlund said that the WCW officials reviewed the tape and that he would not get a title shot like he was supposed to get. He was supposed to get a title shot.
He got eliminated. Well, he got knocked over the ropes and was holding on, and I think both his feet touched the floor, but the referee didn't see it. And then they reviewed the tape, and that's why they took the match away from him.
Yeah, so then they announced that Luger would take his spot and face the Giant instead, which I understand because Luger had been chokeslammed fairly recently through that table. So Luger facing the Giant made sense storyline-wise. And it was just, you know, it was cool stuff. All right, so that week's Nitro was just another Nitro, and then the very next week, May 27th, 1996.
Wait, you forgot the main event.
Of course. Sorry about that. The Giant beat Arn Anderson with a choke slam, and Kevin Sullivan was outside there, and the only reason he was out with Arn Anderson, and he told Behar that he was only there to make sure that Arn Anderson got a fair shot. Which this is kind of like during the time where the Dungeon and the Horsemen were friends, but like kind of like, you know, I'm gonna watch my back, but you're my friend right now. I mean, the way they did that and like how subtle it was, like how they would, you know, do the little things like, you know, hey, I may turn on you one day. I really liked the whole storyline. What do you think of it?
Yeah, and they had, you know, Benoit kind of taking the Pillman role. He was like trying to say Sullivan and those guys, they were no good, and they were just you know, they were just kind of leeching off the Horsemen and stuff like that, and that's kind of what started the feud with he and Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah, it was very great. It was very great. I really liked it. And all right, so that's the end of that show. That's the end of that show. And before we get into this next one, I just want to say that to download all the past episodes of our show and, of course, listen to this one, you can go to superfriendsuniverse.com and you can listen to all their other great shows plus our show. So don't forget to go to that website. So now we get into that was one Nitro, one week, everything changes. And it just starts with one little thing. It's the date is May 27th, 1996, and
the first 2 hours of Nitro.
It's the very first 2 hour Nitro. It's the first time they've gone to 2 hours, and the funny thing about it is, this Nitro, historically, like some of these matches, you know, Arn Anderson and Ric Flair beat Mark Bagwell and Scotty Riggs, and you know they had a little back and forth thing, and they this cool thing was Ric Flair had this thing called the VIP lounge that he would like set up right around ringside. It was like this like table, and it would have like, you know, fine wines and food like fruit and stuff like that on there. And it was just, I don't know, I thought it was pretty cool, like how, you know, it was right there, you know.
Yeah,
right,
and the previous week, Flair took a bunch of the food and stuff up and did commentary, and then Bobby Heenan left with all the food at the end of the show.
Yes, which is so great. And then, so, you know, they accept the challenge, of course. They're going to face Steve McMichael and Kevin Green. Then the Mauler, who was a nobody, you know.
The Mauler was Mike Enos from the Beverly Brothers.
Yes. And he had been in, eventually his partner would eventually come and join him. But for right now, he's just the Mauler. So it's Steve Dahl versus Mike Enos in like a match on Nitro, the first 2 hour Nitro. So you like, you're watching this and you're thinking like, what the hell, you know, why are these two schmucks wrestling?
This is the match where I'm waiting for something to happen, you know, like outside the ring or
like,
something.
When you see something like this, you know, you got to expect something. And then out of nowhere, Scott Hall, who was Razor Ramon in WWF at the time, he appears, like you see him walking, and they kind of like, you know, what are you talking about? What is this? And Larry Zbyszko's like, what is he doing here, you know? And Hall gets on the microphone, and he says Billionaire Ted. He talks about Billionaire Ted and the Nacho Man and Scheme Gene. And he had a challenge for that Ken Doll lookalike. And who was the Ken Doll lookalike?
Eric Bischoff.
Eric Bischoff. And then he said the famous quote, you want to go to war, you want a war, you're going to get one. And then all of a sudden, he just took off. And that's it. He just did something.
Yeah. What was so great about this is, I mean, we knew that these guys were coming in because, I mean, I was the only thing I had was like Pro Wrestling Illustrated, but they had reported those two guys were coming to WCW at the time. And, you know,
yes.
I'm just thinking, just like any other organization, you know, they're going to come in and they're going to fix them up with some kind of a gimmick. So, yeah, see, at first I thought, like, we saw the Glacier vignettes, I thought, like, that was going to be Kevin Nash. Like, you know, because you get this big 7-foot-tall guy, they're going to name him Glacier or something. I thought that's what he was going to be when he came in. Because it's still all about the gimmicks at this time. They weren't using real names and stuff like this.
No.
And so when Scott Hall showed up and started talking about, you know, the billionaire stuff WWF was doing at the beginning of the year, you know, the Billionaire Ted and Nacho Man and stuff like that, I said, what's going on here? I mean,
yes,
it's really intriguing stuff.
It was different than where, like, anybody else had done anything. It was way different. Because
and he was still doing the accent, which he eventually had to drop because of the lawsuit.
Yes, he was still doing the Razor Ramon accent, where, you know, it was just so crazy. And, like, I loved how it felt, because the announcers treated it like, who is that and why is he here? Why is he here on our show? And, like, they didn't, I mean, because normally, you know, you would, like, the way they treated it was like, you know, he was just some guy, like, jumping the railing in a way. Like, you know, they knew who he was, but they didn't know why he was there. And they didn't treat it like it was a debut. Like, normally, like, if he would debut, they'd be like, wow, that's Scott Hall. Why is he here? You know, like, why is he in WCW? But the way they treated this was similar, like a similar way, I guess, but they acted like, you know, he wasn't part of their company, and they had no idea.
They didn't even
say
his name.
Yeah, they didn't even say his name. They just said, like, him, you know. And it was... But one funny thing about that was, like, after the greatness of that, you know, like, you have no idea what's going on. Right after that, the Giant wrestles the Shark, who... the Shark had just been turned on the night before. And he beat him with a chokeslam in a couple of minutes. And then Big Bubba Rogers, who is Big Boss Man, you know, cut the Shark's hair, and he shaved half of his beard. Okay, so they have this, you know, this great thing going on, but they also have this, like, gimmicky crap, like, immediately after, which, you know, another memorable quote will be coming the weeks to come, so. Then we had Luger beat Max, which this is another strange thing, because the week before, there were all competitive matches, and this is, like, another, you know, like a jobber match, almost like WCW Saturday Night after Bill Watts left.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are you thinking about this?
Yeah, I think this was just, they were just giving him something to build him up for the title match at the pay-per-view. So they just kind of threw this out there. And they announced during this match that Benoit and Sullivan would be in the Falls Count Anywhere match at the Great American Bash.
And no one, there's not a single person that knew how awesome that was going to be.
Kevin Sullivan and Benoit, you know, Sullivan wasn't much as a wrestler, but you put him in there with a guy like Benoit, and he's pretty damn awesome, you know.
He is. I mean, honestly, that's exactly what it is. I mean, Benoit, you can say what you want about Chris Benoit, and, you know, everybody knows what happened with Chris Benoit eventually, but at this time, we're just going to talk about, you know, what he was at the time and how, you know, like, how the stuff he was doing was affecting us at the time, you know. But Benoit at the time, you know, he brought the best out of Kevin Sullivan. And
yeah, not too many people could do that.
Yeah, and the thing is, we didn't really know anything about Benoit at the time because he wasn't really a big deal at the time. He wasn't really a big name or anything. He was just kind of, you know, a guy that was there. He was part of the Horsemen, but he hadn't really shown anything that he was, like, you know, a big part of the Horsemen. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he was nothing more than, you know, a Paul Roma, essentially, you know what I mean? Just someone filling the slot that was just there. He would have good matches, but, you know, you didn't know anything about him. And it wasn't until the Kevin Sullivan feud that we really saw how great Chris Benoit could be.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. All right, moving on to shittier things. Bobby Walker, Hard Work Bobby Walker, who eventually sued and beat WCW in a lawsuit, beat Brad Armstrong, and, you know, it was like, it was a babyface match, and then they shook hands afterwards. A little thing about Bobby Walker. Hard Work Bobby Walker sued WCW, and this is in Brian's book or whatever, by saying, like, he wasn't paid by wrestlers such as the Nature Boy Ric Flair. Tell us a little bit about the work rate and the skill of Hard Work Bobby Walker.
Well, there was no hard work involved, first thing. You know?
Yes.
I think the first time we saw him was, what, 92, when they did that stuff with Ron Simmons? You remember he was supposed to be the partner in that tag, in that Ghetto Oz tag team match?
Yeah.
I bet you that was in a lawsuit, too. And
the Ghetto,
you know,
Oz.
He didn't show up, and they put Scorpio in there. But, yeah, he wasn't any good. I had no idea what this match was on here. this is another weird match. And he beat Brad Armstrong. That kind of pisses me off.
Yes, of course, because Brad Armstrong is everything that Bobby Walker wasn't. Brad Armstrong was underrated. Brad Armstrong was a great wrestler. And Brad Armstrong was under-pushed. And, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, you know, sickening thinking about stuff like that. But, and to think, like, you know, he won a lawsuit due to racism based on, you know, how he felt that he should have been, like, a world champion or something, which is, you know.
Yeah, and in later years, you know, he talked about not making as much as Ric Flair, and in later years it'd be like Stevie Ray is, like, making more than Ric Flair.
Yes. Yeah, because of the lawsuit, Stevie Ray, who was part of Harlem Heat, which was a popular tag team, but at the point, Stevie Ray was nothing but a comedy jobber. And, you know, he would pull out this piece of leather that he called the flapjack, and it was horrible, horrible stuff. But we'll get there.
I remember when the lawsuit was going on, all of a sudden, Stevie Ray is the commentator on Nitro, Booker T is the world champion, and the Cat is the commissioner.
Yes. Just, you know.
Coincidence? I don't think so.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. All right, Lord Regal beat Alex Wright, and this is like the big match on the show that I remember that was actually pretty good. And
yeah.
Alex Wright could work at this point. At first, he was pretty green, but, I mean, at this point, you know, like, he was having good matches with good wrestlers.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it was good that they would, you know, they would do things with Regal sometimes, and he's one of those guys that kind of always got buried, but, you know, what can you do? And then Sting wrestled Scott Steiner to double DQ.
Real quick, Regal did an interview after this. And,
yes. Sorry.
And saying that and Regal said his dad would be proud that he just beat Junior Adolph.
Junior Adolph. This is why WCW got sued. But
and he ended up challenging Sting in this interview, which led to a match at the Great American Bash.
Yes. Which, all right.
Which
well,
was weird to me at the time because
yes.
Regal really wasn't up at that level, you know.
All right, let's talk about Sting real fast. Sting wrestled Scott Steiner to a double DQ because Rick and Lex Luger, they came out, they were all fighting, and they all started, you know, brawling with each other, and so they're all like, you know, wrestling each other, you know, and then out of nowhere, Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, shows up at the commentary table and tells Bischoff that he wants to challenge three of WCW's best, and he wasn't coming alone, and if WCW wanted a war, they could get one, but it would not be in the ring. Not in the microphone, or not on the microphones, not in the newspapers, and not on the dirt sheets. Sorry, it would be in the ring. I apologize for that. But the way
I didn't know
the
what a dirt sheet was at this time.
Was,
I didn't know what he was talking about.
You know, we're all thinking like, okay, well, we know Diesel's coming. We know Diesel's coming. But who else is coming? Because, you know, like at this point, I was kind of on the internet a little bit, and I would read, like, wrestling rumor sites, but I didn't know anything about the Observer or anything. But, you know, remember they would have, like, those cheesy rumor sites, and, you know, you'd be all excited to go to, like, these, you know, wrestling rumors or something. Like, you know, Lex Luger might join the Wolfpack or something. Like, it would be something like that, like, around 98. You'd see something like that. Well, no one really knew who it was, and they would say, like, because I think I eventually figured out they would get it from the Observer, but they would say something like, you know, it might be Davey Boy Smith, it might be Bret Hart, because you didn't know, you know, what was happening.
And I think at one point it was supposed to be one of those two guys.
Yeah, because Bret Hart had left the WWF over the summer, for the summer, after he lost the world title to Shawn Michaels. And then there was also a rumor at this time that I remember, in August, that Undertaker was supposed to be leaving WWF after he lost to Mankind after SummerSlam. I remember hearing that over and over. And I remember there was a sign in the crowd that said, like, you know, Undertaker's going to WCW or something. And it was just, like, you just didn't know. You didn't know who
was
coming.
Yeah, I also heard a rumor it was going to be, like, Yokozuna or somebody like that.
Yeah. Well, Yokozuna was supposed to come at one point, right?
Yeah, but I think he got too fat.
Yeah, he got too big.
And the commissions wouldn't let him wrestle or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, the commissions. One thing that was always very odd, to me at least, they're building up this feud with the Steiners and Lex Luger and Sting. And this is by far, like, one of the biggest WCW feuds, tag teams, like, ever. Because it happened back in 1991, and then now it's happening again, like, in 96. And this could be a main event. This could be a main event of a show. I mean,
yeah,
and
remember,
like,
how good that match was in
1991. I'm sorry?
I said, remember how good that match was in 1991. That was an awesome match.
It was great. And the thing is, this could be a main event on a pay-per-view. I mean, it really could. At least I felt that it could be a main event. And they were actually carrying this feud out on Nitro. And it was... I don't know. It was so weird. It was so weird. I don't know. So let's the next Nitro. Well, in between this, they had the World Wrestling Peace Festival, and this was put together. Wasn't it put together by AAA, right?
Maybe Antonio Inoki.
Oh, yes, it was Antonio Inoki. It was. And it was like one of those things that they wanted to have every single wrestling company come together and, you know, put a match or two in there. And the card itself was insane. I mean, the amount of talent that was there. And after the show, the only reason I'm making mention of it is because Eric Bischoff was at the show. And... you saw a lot of these guys show up after this.
Yeah, this got Chris Jericho's job in WCW, like in August.
Yes, so all these guys that he saw, I mean, you saw a lot of them show up in WCW eventually. So,
yeah.
You know, it was cool. So John Tenta, okay, beat Big Bubba via countout, and...
He'll have to have the head shaved so he could remember what they did to him.
He kept it that way. And he was trying to give, you know, Big Bubba a haircut with his own pair of scissors. So Big Bubba, you know, of course, ran away because he doesn't want to get his hair cut. So he lost a wrestling match because he doesn't want to get his hair cut with these scissors, you know. And so afterwards, Gene Okerlund comes up to him and he's like, Shark, you know. And... Shark says that he wasn't a fish or an avalanche. He was a man. His name was John Tenta. And he said that eventually he would shave the head of the world champion, the Giant. And
yeah, right.
Yes. Yes. And
yeah, I believe that at the time.
Yes. And they also, during this match, another thing we should notice is that there was an ad for WCW in USA Today. And it had, whoever put this ad out should have been fired immediately, okay?
Whoever mentioned this, thought about mentioning this on the air should be fired. You point out that you're so stupid, you have people working for you that don't know who's in the company and who's not. Yeah.
Well, Vader had been gone at this point for almost one full year.
Yeah.
Almost a whole year. All right, so he made mention that in this ad that Johnny B. Badd and Vader, you know, were in this ad, but they wouldn't be appearing during the show because they were no longer playing with the big boys. I loved when Shivani would say that. Just such a freaking smartass, you know? Just like those little comments that, I don't know. It just irritates the hell out of me. That this, you know? Oh, gosh, I don't know. WCW, stuff like that, it was so low rent. All right.
I wouldn't care if they did it like every few weeks, but when they do it every week, it gets to be, okay, we get the picture. You know, shut up.
Yes. All right. Ming and the Barbarian beat High Voltage, okay? High Voltage was this team that came in around this time. This might have been their first. Yeah, this was their first match. These guys were so jacked up on steroids. I mean, they looked like they you know how you kind of said like about Scott Norton, how they, like he just looks like a big badass, you know? Both
yeah.
these guys looked like if you fought them in the bar, they would rip your freaking balls off. They were huge. They were never, ever more than jobbers. And later, I read in the Hardy Boys book that either Matt or Jeff sent in a WCW had this contest where, hey, you know, show off your interview skills. We talked about it on the show before.
Oh,
like,
I
show
remember
off your
that.
Interview skills, like, and, you know, maybe you'll get a job in WCW. So either Matt or Jeff said that they had this character, you know, hey, I'm High Voltage. Well, someone in WCW later told them that they just stole the idea. They just took the name High Voltage and gave it to these, you know, Kenny Chaos and Ricky Rage, which was some awesome names.
Robbie Rage.
Well, yeah, Robbie Rage. Sorry, Couture. I apologize, sir. All right. Pitbull Pittman now is being managed by Teddy Long. And Pitbull Pittman went from a heel that was like kind of like a tweener heel where he wasn't like a bad heel, but you know what I mean? He would just wrestle whoever. To a full-on babyface of Teddy Long. And in my opinion, this fully killed his career because he was awesome as a heel, I thought. As a
yeah,
baby
he,
face,
was, he was like a real badass as a heel.
Mm-hmm. When he beat Disco Inferno, and Disco Inferno, like, still show after show was always the best, like, comedy jobber that they had. Because,
yeah.
You know, after this match, even though he Disco gave up before the guy even put the submission move on him. And, like, why did he do that? Because he motioned to the camera afterwards that he quit so he could still dance. So this man, who's a wrestler in this company, this multi-million-dollar wrestling company, he doesn't care about wrestling. He's willing to lose. As long as he's allowed to go out in front of the fans and dance, and he
yeah.
was okay with that. And, like, and most people will think that's garbage. I'm not one of those people. What did you think about Disco?
I like finishes like that when you got goofballs like Disco Inferno or somebody like that. I mean, come on, they couldn't do much in the ring, so they might as well have fun with them, having this bunch of goofy shit.
Yes, it was just so great. It's so great. All right. Lord Regal beat Hacksaw Duggan in a couple minutes after Bobby Eaton came out to try helping Regal. And then, you know, Regal taped his fist three times with, you know, tape, and he knocked Bobby Eaton out. And then Dave Taylor took Hacksaw Duggan's 2x4, and then, Regal rolled him up and pinned him. And then Regal said that, you know, he's going to have his match with Sting and did an interview about it with Mean Gene after this.
Do you remember they did a contract signing for that match?
I do not remember the contract signing. What show was it on?
It might have been Saturday night or something. They did contract signing, and then like just like in this room, and they're signing the contract, and then the Regal stands up, and this is the first time I've heard him use the term sunshine, which I thought was so funny, and then Sting starts to get up, and Regal just gives him like the biggest backhand slap you've ever seen, and Sting just like gobsmacked sitting in his chair, just backhanded by Steven Regal, and then that's where it ended.
That, I mean, one thing that I kind of wanted to talk about was on the show, I think it was right after that, was Kevin Sullivan wrestled Prince Iaukea, or as Dusty Rhodes would call him, like Prince Akiki, or, you know, he would say his name different every time. But,
yeah.
The Prince Akakiki, baby. And afterwards, Kevin Sullivan did this, like, interview where it was, like, Kevin Sullivan would do these weird interviews where you knew he had backstage power because he would pretty much just say it. He would just say it. And he said that there was two wars going on in WCW. One, the legal department would handle, which I think they're talking about WWF trying to sue them, right?
Because you know, like Razor came in, like doing his gimmick, you know, from WWF with the accent and kind of trying to play it up like he's from the WWF.
Yes. And then the thing is, like, right after he said that, right after he goes, and the other war is against Hulkamania. And Kevin Sullivan tells his buddy, Arn Anderson, because they're friends at the time, you know, they're still friends, that he warned him about Brian Pillman, and they showed, like, some footage of the Brian Pillman taking off. And then he said that Benoit was a, and I quote, serpent. So, you know, it was like, WCW was trying to give you, like, this is going to sound really corny and stuff, but like a peek behind the curtain a little bit, you know? And it was so cool. It was so cool because you'd never seen anything like it. I mean, during the Monday Night Wars, I mean, honestly, did you watch both shows?
Yeah, I would watch Raw,
right?
and then I'd take, like, the Nitro replay, you know, that came on, like, right after.
Oh, see, the thing I would do, I would actually watch Nitro, and in my living room, you know, or at my grandma's house or whatever, and I would tape one in my room. I had a TV and VCR in my room, and I would tape Raw. I've always watched Nitro first because I preferred Nitro.
Uh-huh.
And another interesting thing on this Nitro, this particular one, which this is, I mean, we've spent a lot of time on this, but Flair and Anderson beat the Rock and Roll Express, which the Rock and Roll Express were on the show, and this was in, you know, North Carolina. You know, 10 years before this, or even, you know, 6 or 7, this match would have been so hot in the Carolinas. You know what I mean? And it still was the 10 years later. And Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, they didn't work very long in WCW, did they?
I think they went, like, through maybe the summer, and then they were gone.
Yeah, it was.
Because I remember them still wrestling, like, July, so I think it was just, like, the summer. So just a couple of months, I think.
Yeah, and they announced that Randy Savage is still allowed to be a part of the show. He can still be there. But he's not allowed to wrestle on TV or pay-per-view until further notice, according to the WCW management. And then when they announced it, Bobby Heenan was always like a snake, you know. He would always be a snake. And he would, the weasel, you know, that everybody would say that he was, you know. And so he immediately left and went to the VIP lounge that Ric Flair always had set up, like, on these Nitros, and whispered something to, I think it was Woman. So, like, he was immediately snitching about this. And then, well, Heenan said that he was going to come out of he said one time that he would never manage anybody again. And then,
but he could be a coach.
Yes, that he could be a coach. So he said he would be the coach for Arn Anderson and Ric Flair again. That's the Great American Bash. So what did you? There was like a Halliburton, right? Wasn't like
he had a Halliburton case, and I don't know what this trophy meant, but he. It was a trophy. It was called the Madden Award that he won for coaching John Madden's team. I'm not into sports, so I don't know what that means.
I can explain it to you.
Okay.
Like, football teams don't have a manager. They have coaches, you know? Well, the 1988 Madden, All Madden team, John Madden named Bobby the Brain Heenan the manager of his team, his All Madden team for that year. So that's why he had that. And he had it in a Halliburton, which I think he was just trying to get over, like, the Halliburton briefcase in general. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because it would lead to the match at the pay-per-view.
Yes. Yes. So, the giant Russell Ice Train just destroyed him.
Giant was awesome champion at this time. He was just beating everybody.
Yes, he was great.
And he was beating them like with no bullshit either.
Yes,
you know,
it was awesome.
Just like 1, 2, 3, right in the middle of the ring.
And it was great that he was the champion because, I mean, there was no one like him in wrestling at the time. It was just awesome.
This was the best he's ever been booked in his career, that I think.
I 100% agree with you.
This is from, yeah.
I 100% agree with you. And then this is one of another thing that was really weird that they did was, you know, of course Ice Train lost, but then Scott Norton comes out, okay, and they announced before the match that Ice Train and Scott Norton would wrestle Rick and Scott Steiner to see who gets a title shot. At the next title shot at Sting and Lex Luger, okay? Well, the Giant beat the shit out of Scott Norton, too. So not only did he beat Ice Train, he also beat the shit out of Scott Norton. And then Scott Norton immediately wrestles right after that, beats Hugh Morris. Like, and then right after that, Lex Luger and Sting wrestle Rick and Scott Steiner. Why would they have a match to see who gets the title shot before a title match?
I don't know. Was this a title match or was it non-title? It probably was a title match. They did all the title matches back then. They weren't doing non-title matches.
Yeah, they weren't really doing non-title matches. But
I have
during
no idea.
During this match, it should be announced that Randy Savage was doing commentary, and he agreed to be the coach for Mongo McMichael and Kevin Green. And the reason that Bobby Heenan, everybody should know this, Bobby Heenan agreed to be the coach because he hated Mongo. He hated Mongo McMichael. They did commentary together, and he hated him. He always made fun of him. He thought he was stupid. So he was doing it just, not only was he friends with Ric Flair, but also he hated Mongo that much that he's willing to coach against him because he doesn't like him. So, you know, that's that, you know.
And
then we have the...
Scott Hall made another appearance.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Go ahead.
He came up to the podium, you know, same thing as last week. You know, just kind of throwing the challenge out there again. And then all of a sudden, Sting comes up to the announced position. And so Scott Hall, he does a little toothpick thing. He throws toothpick right in Sting's face, and Sting just slaps him right across the face. And he says he's got a big surprise next week. So that's how that ended.
Yes, a big surprise. So we all knew that was going to be Kevin Nash. I mean, we all knew that was going to be Kevin Nash. So we have the last Nitro, the go-home show for...
The Great American
Bash.
Yeah,
it was a go-home show for Great American Bash. And so we have Scott Steiner open the show, okay? And he beat Booker T with overhead belly-to-belly suplex, which this was another strange match. Because Booker T had nothing to do with this feud, and he was just kind of like looked as like overkill almost for the push of Scott Steiner and Rick Steiner, who were going to be, you know, eventually going for those tag titles. The legendary jobber Jim Powers, who's been a jobber for 15 years, loses to DDP, Diamond Cutter, Sting beat Ming, which this like really bummed me out because, you know, a couple months before this, Ming and Sting were like a semi-main event on shows, you know? Like for the U.S. title and all that stuff.
Oh, that was the previous year.
Okay. It was a year. Not even a year. It was less than a year. I mean, it was at the end of the year, wasn't it?
No, it was the Great American Bash of 95. You remember when they had the tournament final for the U.S. title?
Oh, okay. But then they wrestled again at another pay-per-view right after that, or at least a Nitro. But, I mean, it was never – he would never beat him in 3 minutes, though. He beat him in 3 minutes with the Scorpion Deathlock.
Yeah, by submission.
Yes,
Ming is the guy would never have lose by submission.
Never, ever. But Jim Duggan beat Dave Taylor because of revenge, because Dave Taylor interfered and stole his 2x4. The Giant beat Scott Norton, which this is kind of another thing where, like, I guess they're pushing the Giant, and he's killing guys. And like Katrina said earlier, Scott Norton's a killer, and he looks crazy awesome. And the Giant destroyed him, so that's really pushing the Giant.
Yeah, and
I thought it was
remember the previous week, the Giant gave him like 2 choke slams, and then he still came back and beat Hugh Moore, so they kind of, I like the way they did this, they had him hit the choke slam on the floor and then roll him in and pin him. No.
Yeah. Billy Kidman appears on the show. This
I think
might
this
have been
was his
one
first,
of his
first appearance on Nitro. Yeah.
Yes, he loses to Lord Regal. What's funny about
at the time, you know, said Kidman, he was doing jobs on Worldwide. Did you see how many guys today that were doing jobs on Worldwide back then?
Edge, Rhino, Christian, yes.
Yeah, all those guys. I mean, because I never really watched Worldwide because it was boring, quite frankly. But yeah, I go on YouTube and you see all these matches with those guys like Kevin Sullivan beating Edge and stuff like that. It's pretty cool.
It is. It's very interesting. Nitro was such a unique show because right after this, we have Public Enemy beat the Nasty Boys. And it seemed like you hadn't seen either of those guys. They were on the house shows, but they hadn't been on Nitro for a long time.
Yeah.
And they just had a match against each other, of course. So it was probably they were getting used to that two-hour show.
And they're leading up to Public Enemy, Nasty Boys, and a double dog collar at the pay-per-view. No, that's at Bash of the Beach, I was mistaken.
Yes. You're still a little bit away, because the next one's just going to be a double disqualification match. No disqualification match. False count anywhere,
substituting Sting and Luger, substituting for Joe Gomez and the Renegade, the classic tag team, Joe Gomez and the Renegade.
Yeah, Joe Gomez and the Renegade were this.
This was before they formed their little gay quartet with Jim Powers and Alex Wright.
Yes. That was potentially the gayest group in the history, you know, of ever.
And what I like about this 2 hours is these matches are getting a lot of time.
It's like, matches like that were getting time.
Yeah, the matches like this and like the previous week, I think Rock and Roll Express and Flair and Arn Anderson got like 20 minutes.
Yes, which is great.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. All right, it was a no contest because the Giant interfered. You know, they were just throwing it away because they could. They could throw it away, and it's no big deal because, you know, that's exactly what it was. It was just no big deal. Dick Murdoch died.
I love Dick Murdoch.
Right before the Great American Bash 96.
At the beginning of the show, Dusty Rhodes said something because, you know, that was his partner all those years.
Yes.
Texas Outlaw, so.
Yes. So Dusty Rhodes was very upset about this.
He was only 49. I swear he looked like he was 55 years old through most of his career. Big Murdoch.
He always looked very, very old.
Arn Anderson had the look. He always looked like he was 40, even when he was young.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. I mean, honest to God, he always looked young. Or always looked old, I mean. Sorry.
Yeah, he always looked at least like 40 years old.
Yes. This is so awesome. And then I believe on the Nitro, the closing Nitro, and Kevin Nash came out.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
made
sure
his debut. And
yeah, he said.
He said, so this is where the big boys play. Well, we don't play, which was an awesome line.
He said, pay attention to the, to the adjective. We're not here to play, or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, adjective.
He said, you've been sitting out here for 6 months running your mouth. And now we know what he's talking about because we're watching WWF at the time. So he says, and then I think Bischoff said, well, show up at the Great American Bash and I'll have something for you or something like that. And they kind of punked him out and left.
Yep. Conan.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's, I mean, with just that feud, by the way, like that, them coming in, you know, it was so strange that no one came out then, you know?
Yeah. It'll get a little bit worse, like, as we go on, when they really get into the whole NWO thing.
Yeah, well let's get into that first, okay? You know, the interview that happens on the show. They have, you know, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall come out, and they kind of had to say some things, like, legally to get WCW out of a bind.
Yeah.
You know, they said, like, you know, are you from the WWF? And they're like, no.
Yeah, they said, are you currently working for the WWF? And they said no, that they weren't.
Yes. So they said that they would accept their challenge, and it would be at Bash of the Beach, July 7th at Daytona Beach. And they said that they would have to wait until the next night to find out who the three opponents would be. And they said that they didn't want to wait anymore. So Scott Hall, wearing denim from head to toe, punches Eric Bischoff, and Kevin Nash gives him, like, the sickest-looking powerbomb. He sold it up so much for that powerbomb.
Yeah.
God,
that was so awesome.
It was awesome, though.
Because I'd really never seen, like, an announcer get touched before. Or,
you
know, like,
you never
executive.
Saw that ever.
And, I mean, he just picked him up and he just launched him.
Great stuff.
I was like, what the fuck is this going on? God, I thought that was, like, the greatest thing I've ever seen at the time.
All right, Rick and Scott.
Which added to this show, this is one of the best WCW pay-per-views of all time.
The one thing we should talk about that first real fast. The Great American Bash 96 from Baltimore was, in my opinion, the best WCW show, with maybe the exception of the show the next month in the history of WCW. I don't think there was ever a better show. I mean, from top to bottom, like, this was just
I mean, you had
so
the, you had the perfect mix of, you had some great wrestling, you had a perfect mix of, like, storyline and angles, you know, kicking off
yeah.
and coming together and stuff like that. It was awesome.
It was just awesome. It was just great, great stuff. All right. We have Rick and Scott Steiner beat Ice Train and Scott Norton in a hell of a match. In a hell of a match for just for something that Ice Train was involved with, this match should not have been as good as it was.
And this was like, you know, because Steiner and Norton, they were all big in Japan, so this was more like a Japanese style, you know, just hard
yeah.
hitting and stuff like that. So
it was awesome. The U.S. champion, Conan, who, if you've noticed, he'd been in AAA again for a while or something, because he hadn't been
yeah.
on TV for quite a while, and he wrestled El Gato. Who was El Gato? I think
Pat
this
Tanaka.
Was his only appearance. Was it
Pat Tanaka? Yeah.
Why would he have gotten a U.S. title shot?
I don't know. They made it up like he was some legend from, like, South America or something, which is bullshit, just to you know, just have, like, an international-type match or something like that.
That's so awesome. Yes. Then we have it was DDP beat Mark Bagwell in a match that, this is why the show was good, because this match should not have been even decent. And it was
yeah.
pretty good. It was good, you know? know? This is like DDP's like kind of like elevation that they were starting to do with him. That they were really,
yeah, and this is when he's defending the ring every month.
Yes, he's defending the ring against people. This Lord of the Ring that he has. So instead of a title, he's defending a ring.
Which, yeah.
You know, whatever. Then Dean Malenko beat Rey Mysterio. And this was Rey Mysterio's debut. In about 18 minutes, by reversing a Hurricane Carmana attempt into a powerbomb, and then he cheated to win. Like, he put his feet up on the rope.
This
in order
is the first
to
time
him.
I ever saw Rey Mysterio wrestle. I mean, I had read, you know, like in the aftermags of him, like in ECW and stuff, but I'd never seen him wrestle until now.
He was
and
so
God,
awesome.
He came out and he was just like, is that a child?
Like, it's so weird because he's so little. You remember when he came out and thought, like, he's so tiny. Why do they have him?
I know. Look how he looks now.
I don't know. It was just very, very interesting stuff. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, sorry. You would quiet.
I was just saying, look at how Ray looks now, as opposed to how he looked then.
Oh, I know. He can ice using steroids all he wants, but you know.
And it was awesome. I wasn't expecting much because Dean Malenko wasn't a big guy, but he was big next to Rey Mysterio.
He was very big, very big.
And the match was kind of slow starting. Malenko, I think, worked the arm for a little bit, but then when Mysterio got into it with all his high-flying stuff, it became an awesome match.
It was. It was really good. It was very good. John Tenta beat Big Bubba with a power slam. After he caught Bubba coming off the top rope, and he was able to cut off some of Big Bubba's beard. And this feud was awesome. I loved it because it was Big Boss Man wrestling the Earthquake, you know, and it was a good mid-card feud to have. You know, it was interesting. It was funny TV. You know, Jimmy Hart was always out, you know, doing what Jimmy Hart does. I mean,
yeah,
like,
somebody trying to cut somebody's hair, which is always entertaining. So
yeah, I mean, I'd rather have that than, you know, some shitty Ice Train match, you know, like Ice Train in a singles match against Scotty Riggs or something, like they would normally do. I'd rather watch those veterans, you know.
And it had a good storyline, it had a good storyline behind it too. So
yes,
which would lead to an awesome match we'll get to on the next show. That I really enjoyed.
Yes. Oh, God. I have goosebumps because I'm so excited about it. All right, then Chris Benoit beat Kevin Sullivan in a false count anywhere match that was only 10 minutes, but they sure stuffed a lot in those 10 minutes.
God,
what
it's such
a great
match
this was. So, it was so good. It really was so good.
Kevin Sullivan's best match ever, I'll tell you that right now.
Yes, it really was.
Cause this is the environment he is really good at. You know, just doing all this hardcore stuff, he's really good at that stuff.
And it was so weird that, I don't know, I mean, Kevin Sullivan really didn't do much in WCW except for this. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, why would they... Like, Kevin Sullivan should have used himself more as an asset as a wrestler than he was. Because he was clearly great. Clearly great. And
again, it goes back to, like, what I said earlier. He has to have a person like Chris Benoit to work with. And he didn't really have that with, like, Hulk Hogan and all those guys.
No, he definitely did not.
And
then...
They go into the
Max
bathroom.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, I have to play something, because... I was uploading some clips, and Dusty Rhodes, I don't care what anybody can say about Dusty, about him being a shitty announcer. I love Dusty Rhodes as an announcer. I don't care what anybody says. He had one of the greatest lines when they went into the bathroom. They panned back and to the fans there, and you got Donut Doug Dillinger. You know, he's like holding people back and stuff like that. And then Dusty, something called Dusty's Eye, and this is what he said.
I tell you, there's a lady in the man's bathroom. Look at that. There is a woman in the man's gown right here in Baltimore.
That's That is so awesome. and Dusty would say something like that, and it had nothing to do with the match, but it's just so great. It's just so great.
And there was a lady in the bathroom, in the men's bathroom in Baltimore.
Yeah, there really was.
I remember Sullivan sitting on the urinal.
Yes.
Sitting on the urinal, yes. Just getting the shit beat out of him, and damn, Benoit got his head slammed in the stall door and stuff like that, and they tried to put him down like the garbage chute, and such an awesome match, and the end of it was awesome. He propped the table up on the top rope, and he superflexed Sullivan off the top rope and pinned him, and then he was still beating on him, and then Arn Anderson came out and pulled him off, said, you know, acting like he's going to take Sullivan's side. Then he kicked Sullivan in the gut, and he and Benoit go, you know, get back on him, and it's like the Horsemen are back together again, which would be real interesting coming up in one of the other matches.
Yes, that's what it is.
Again,
it's
another
like,
storyline, another a great match with like a storyline twist at the end. So,
yes, it was. The Dungeon of Doom at this point had honestly, to go against Hulkamania, you know, they had kind of run its course, it seems like, because no one was really still in the dungeon, you know. Ming, the Barbarian, Big Bubba was part of it. I think there was a Leprechaun at some point. Max was in it, the DDP jobber friend. It was so bad. But, I mean, still, it was just awesome. It was such a great match. Sting and Lord Regal had another great match right after this. Sting was one of those main eventers that, you know, Sting is a main eventer wrestler. He's definitely a main event guy. And some people didn't treat him that way always, but he always had the fans behind him. He always was, to me at least, like a big deal in wrestling. But he was one of those guys like that he will always have at least a decent match, but if he's in there with a really good opponent, he can have a really good match. He had him with Ric Flair, and then also in this match he had it with Regal. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I thought this was a great match because, you know, Regal really wasn't being pushed at that time, so I was kind of shocked that they had this match in the first place. So, and I knew, it's not like I didn't know Regal could work because obviously I did. I'd been watching him for years. And so, yeah, this was a great match.
I loved it. Loved it. All right, we have... All right. This is this next match. Ric Flair and Arn Anderson with Bobby Heenan, Elizabeth and Woman, were against Steve McMichael and Kevin Green. Okay?
With Randy Savage.
With Randy Savage, yes. Go ahead and let's break it down for us.
Well, they came to the ring with their wives, Deborah McMichael and Terry Green, yeah. And this was a great match, and I was really surprised. And I was also kind of worried going in because, oh, it's the football players against the wrestler. So, and I said, please don't let them beat Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. Please don't let them do that. But this was a great match. I mean, Steve McMichael, he was good in this match, but, you know, after this and all his other matches, I never liked him. Kevin Graham actually became a pretty damn good professional wrestler, I thought, and had some really he had some pretty good matches, like, in the next couple of years in WCW. And he was probably maybe the best, like, football guy, you know, that came in one of these matches and really became a pretty good professional wrestler. So anyway, during the match, the women, Elizabeth and Woman, they chase the wives back to the dressing room. And so, trying to see what happened.
You want me to take over?
Yeah, go ahead and take over because I'm kind of drawing a blank on it.
All right. Well, Woman and Elizabeth, they run off the other girls. They ran off the other girls, and then they returned, or then Elizabeth and Woman returned with Deborah. And Deborah was wearing, sports stuff like almost like a cheerleader for her husband. But But then she came back wearing a dress, and she showed Mongo, who's there at ringside looking at her like, what's going on? A Halliburton briefcase, like Bobby Heenan had on that
and,
Nitro a couple weeks before.
Kevin Green's in the figure four at this time.
Yes, he's in the figure four. He wants help, you know. And he sees the Four Horsemen shirt inside the Halliburton. And so then he takes it. He hits Kevin Green with the Halliburton. And then Benoit comes out, and they all attack Randy Savage and Kevin Green. And then what was even shown in the still the next night on Nitro, I'll never forget it, is Bobby Heenan and Mongo McMichael shaking hands.
Yeah.
which was so great. So great.
This was such a great turn. This was so awesome.
There's not a single person that saw this coming. No one saw it coming. So Mongo is now a full-time wrestler and a heel. And Mongo wasn't bad. He wasn't good, but he wasn't bad. He was very, very, you know, walked around kind of like a, almost like a stiff zombie in a way. But he was still, you know, an addition to the Horsemen that, you know, a former NFL Super Bowl, you know, ring-having champion. And
yeah.
it was a cool addition, a very shocking turn. And so now the Horsemen are complete. There's four of them.
And they also announced during this match that Savage had been reinstated and was going to wrestle Flair the next night.
Yes, they did. They did announce that. And then the Giants just beat Lex Luger with a chokeslam because Luger was trying to do the torture rack.
I never understood why you would try to do that to a man that size. That's like so stupid.
Yes, it was so dumb. And the Luger Giant match was pretty good until the kind of a flat ending. But it was a great pay per view. It was a great pay per view. Rick Steiner the next night on Nitro wrestled Stevie Ray. Pretty much destroys him. And then Booker T comes out. So now. Now they're kind of doing like a little feud between Booker, the Harlem Heat, and the Steiners. Even though the Steiners earned themselves a title shot, which okay, that's fine. Because Scott beat Booker T
the week before. You remember?
Yes. Well, the reason they're doing this is because they have to put that on hold. They have to put that feud on hold because, well, you'll hear about it a little bit later. Joe Gomez beat Disco Inferno. Because Disco's trying to do the lazy cover with both of his arms. And then...
And Shabani announced that Hogan called WCW to ask that his name be put in the hat to be one of the three guys.
Yes.
They were going to pick names like out of a hat or something like that to see who the opponents were going to be.
Yes. They did. They said out of a hat. They were putting names in a hat. So instead of picking the three best, they put a bunch of names in the hat. So, I mean, like, the team to face these outsiders could very well have been, you know, Hugh Morris, Alex Wright, and, you know, Dean Malenko.
top guys that they would put the name in the hat. I think it was, like, Hogan and Flair and the Giant, you know, Sting and Luger and Savage and guys like that.
Okay. Arn Anderson, I think, was in there, too. I could have sworn it was, but I could be wrong. All right. Hogan had called in. Arn Anderson and Benoit now reunited as the Horsemen. Now, the Horsemen on the show are pushed as, like, stronger than ever. Because they kind of said that they were distracted with this whole dungeon shit. And, you know, it was – they're sick of it. They're sick of, you know, all this stuff. And now that they're united, and they're against Kevin Sullivan.
They had Chris and Las Vegas all bruised up to put over the match. And I think that match was one they pushed more than any match, like on Nitro, you know, that Falls Count Anywhere match.
Yes, it was. They were talking about how great it was. Because it was. They had a rematch with John Cena and Big Bubba, which is like the greatest mid-card feud going on at the time. And, you know, he he cheats to beat Big Bubba, okay? And afterwards, I mean, the thing is, he's a babyface and he cheated to win. Well, afterwards, Bubba pours out these coins. He hits him with a sock. Okay,
sock,
I know that sounds very
coins.
Goofy. Yes, a sock. He throws a sock, like a white sock, and knocks out John Tessa with a sock.
But they could do Carson City silver dollars.
Yeah.
Is that what they were?
Yes, they were. Carson City silver dollars. Inside, you know, couldn't he get a couple
of know what that
quarters?
Means.
Yes. And
maybe they stopped in Carson City, Virginia or something on the way to the show and picked up some silver dollars. I don't know.
Yes. And afterwards, they did an interview where Kevin Sullivan said everybody that turns their back on the Dungeon of Doom pay for it, kind of saying that, like, you know, because John Tessa turned on the Dungeon, that he's going to pay for it. And he also meant Benoit and Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
Ric Flair beats Randy Savage in his first match back after Mongo McMichael hit Randy Savage over the head with the Halliburton. And
I just remember at the beginning of this match, Randy Savage chased Bobby Heenan around the arena from the broadcast station because of the night before.
Yeah, so great.
Savage
so
is so great as an insane person.
he
can look at him and you can believe it.
Yeah.
It's probably a little bit true in his real life, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure he is a legit psychopath, and that's fine. That's fine because he played a great one. And Flair came out wearing a Kevin Green shirt to kind of, like, you know, say that, hey, he beat him. And then also in this match, Flair was just a top-notch heel. He made fun of Randy Savage's divorce. Because they're trying to make Randy Savage go crazy, you know, because they wanted him to get suspended, you know. Dean Malenko and Mysterio had a rematch for the night before, and, you know, Mysterio lost again, but, you know, it was still exciting.
Another
stuff.
Great match.
It's leading for more stuff with Mysterio. The Giant beat Scott Steiner with a choke slam, and I remember at this time I thought because of this match, wow, they should really push Scott Steiner because it was a good match, you know, and he lasted 10 minutes with the Giant, and everybody else would last two.
I think he was even pulling out some of those suplexes on the Giant.
It was awesome. It was awesome. Oh, I loved it. Loved it.
And they announced Luger and Sting and Savage as the threesome that we're going to be a Bash at the Beach against Hall and Nash and their partner.
Yeah, so Savage is in this feud with Flair, you know, and they have this crazy ass on their team. And it's so awesome how, you know, just months before this, Luger and Savage were fighting in that weird uncensored cage, you know?
Yeah.
So
and they went through all those months about Luger and you can't trust him and stuff like that.
And now they have to be in a team. And Randy Savage kind of says, you know, he doesn't trust Luger right now, you know?
Yeah, but it fits because they're, like, defending their company. So to me, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, and, you know, he's dealing with it. He just deals with it. All right, they have the Public Enemy who beat the now once again downgraded Lord Regal and Squire Dave Taylor when Johnny Grunge beat Dave Taylor. And then the Nasty Boys, or no, the Public Enemy, they challenged the Nasty Boys to a double dog collar match at the Bash of the Beach coming up. And the Public Enemy, they brought their dog collar chain to the ring with them. And, you know, they're playing to the crowd now, you know. Kevin Sullivan gets DQ'd against Kip A.B.
Kip A.B.?
Whatever.
I love Kevin Sullivan squash matches.
Yeah, because you're just taking everywhere. Yeah, and they announced that Kevin Sullivan had a partner to face Benoit Arnett in Bash of the Beach, and it would be the Giant. But if one of the Horsemen, won the match, that person or a member of their group would get a world title shot the following night against the Giant. So, during the match itself, people were chanting, "We want Flair, we want Flair." So, but Dean Malenko wrestled out of all the people signed to WCW, okay? They have all this talent. There's Brett Armstrong.
The time when they probably had like 50 wrestlers in the back at Nitros.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many good guys too, And fucking hard work Bobby Walker from Dean Malenko. And he's so bad. He's so bad that he even made Dean Malenko look bad. But the greatest thing about this was Disco Inferno earned himself somehow a title shot at the Cruiserweight title. Okay, he lost weight in order to be considered a Cruiserweight. So now he is the number one contender, okay, the Disco Inferno is. And I'll never forget that, like, on Worldwide and on Saturday night, Disco Inferno is like, he's fucking around during his matches, and he realizes, oh, shit, I can't fuck around. And so he'd win the matches, with his, whatever he calls his moves. And
I can't even remember what he was using at this time.
He was doing the neckbreaker, I think. The chart buster.
That's right. No, that was a stunner that he would use
the next
year. I can't remember what he was using.
He was like an updated version
of Honky Tonk Man at this time.
But he was so great. He's so great. And the funny thing is, like, the Honky Tonk Man was famous, 10 years earlier for, music from the 50s. And now he's using music from the 70s, 10 years later. I don't know. Disco was just great. He was so great. And he claimed that, not only is he getting a title shot, but his record is selling 1 million copies. And it went gold. And Disco and Malenko. And Malenko, the best thing about this feud, that, Dean Malenko is so freaking, he was called the Iceman. He's so dead serious, And Disco's just a fucking goober,
And I was looking forward, I said, please let Dean Malenko kill this fucker,
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I was excited, though, for it, All right, so Eddie Guerrero beat the Barbarian. And this was, to me, was a big win for Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
And then after the match, Guerrero says that, he wished that his name was on the list to face the Outsiders, Eddie Guerrero should be in that list, eventually he was great, but this time he was just some guy with a mullet and a mustache, that no one really cared about.
Yeah.
The Rock and Roll Express lost to Arn Anderson and Benoit, who they're, showing them as a team now. And, it always kind of disappointed me that they never really took them as a team to the next level, because they were awesome. They were so great as a team.
Yeah.
I mean, they were really good. And one kind of funny thing was, at the end of this match, because Mongo was out there, Macho Man Randy Savage, who's going to be in this main event coming up, him and Kevin Green, who has nothing to do with anything anymore, because they ran out to clear the ring. Kevin Green, I don't think we even see him again for another year, right?
Yeah, it would seem like later in, he would be on a Nitro in December or something, but then we wouldn't see him until when they were building up, that Slamboree match with him and Piper and Flair.
Yes.
And that six man.
Did him and Mongo ever have a singles match?
Yeah, they had it at They headed to the Great American Bash in 97.
The next year. Yes, the next year. That's what I thought. Yeah, yeah. 1 year in the making, you know. DDP beat Alex Wright. And DDP announced that, I think, wasn't it? Yeah, DDP would be defending his Lord of the Ring, you know, against Jim Duggan at the Bash of the Beach. And oddly enough, like, it was that match at the pay-per-view, we'll get that. It was super over. It was over live there. And, you know, I wasn't against it. And then also Ric Flair, who kind of was doing jack shit this time, he's doing nothing, would go against Conan for the U.S. title. And Conan was so just not over.
Yeah.
He was not over. And Flair, to me, it was, I remember when they announced this match, like even as a kid, I was thinking, like, you know, U.S. title, Ric Flair? It always seemed like to me, like, even today, like, maybe later in life, you know, like, when he was, like, doing his stuff with Carlito, but, like, the U.S. title was kind of beneath Ric Flair. I mean, in my opinion, it was.
Yeah, I mean, because I was so used to this time. I mean, if Flair's going to be a champion, he should be the world champion. You know?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Because he'd been the champion for so many years, it was just, I mean, I could never see him holding anything else. Maybe the tag team title, but, you know, but not the U.S. title or anything like that.
No. Randy Savage destroys DK Wall Street in about not even 5 minutes, and Savage had his face painted like Sting, which was hilarious. Because the thing is, even though he has a full beard and he painted his face like Sting, there isn't a thing on earth that was funnier at the Bash of the Beach coming up than Luger wearing the face paint.
Oh, God,
Luger,
he was like a goofball.
He totally did. Just so great. So great. This match was just so awesome. Because, like, this was so shocking for me, this upcoming. The Harlem Heat, they beat Sting and Luger and Rick and Scott Steiner in a three-way match to win the titles because Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, they came out with, like, baseball bats and securities all around them. And, you know, they're all coming there. And then one of the Harlem Heat just, like, rolls them up, you know?
Yeah.
And
what was so great about this was the cops hit the ring. And, you know, the cops are in the ring. And they've got their hands on their guns, like, in case they got to pull them or something like that.
Yes. Yes. I mean, but it feels so real. It looks real.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So awesome. Oh, God. And, and it was like another thing that you just didn't see coming. You just did not see it coming at all. And they're really turning it up. They're turning it up, like, majorly that, you know, that it's, you know, a big deal. You know, it's a big deal Nitro to watch Nitro because something big like that could happen. This show opened up with, DDP comes out, okay, and he says that his Lord of the Ring had been stolen, and he wanted everybody in the crowd, everybody in attendance, to be strip searched until it was found. So that's the thing with DDP. He cannot find his ring. Someone stole it from him. Harlem Heat beat the Steiners.
This is the go-home show for Bash at the Beach, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, this is the go-home show. I believe it was only 3 weeks, right? It was only 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was only 3 weeks between the Great American Bash and Bash at the Beach.
And this TV, all this TV was just so great, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they beat the Steiners. And then the thing that was crazy about this was Colonel Robert Parker just showed up during the match after he'd not been seen for months. I mean, I hadn't seen Colonel Robert Parker for a while.
I think the last time we saw him was at Uncensored when he lost to Medusa.
Yes, yes. And I believe, was it him that Booker T was talking to on the cell phone?
I don't know, because you remember Cherry eventually showed back up.
Oh, yeah, she did. But,
I'm not sure. I think she shows back up at I think she shows back up at the pay-per-view, at the Bash of the Beach pay-per-view. I'm not sure, though.
Yes, but right this second, it was Colonel Parker's debut with the Home Heat.
Yeah.
You know, to be like their manager, kind of.
It's like the gimmick, it's like what they wanted to do back in 93, except they didn't bring him out in chains. You know?
Yes. All right, this next match, okay? All right, so Disco Inferno against Kurosawa, who we hadn't seen in a long time as well. All right, in the middle of the match, you know, it's a short match, a couple minutes, there's a man that comes out in an Elvis jumpsuit just dancing. So Randy Anderson and Kurosawa are just, like, looking at this, like, what the hell is going on? Then Disco hit his disco ball that he'd always come out and dance to, and he fucking hit Kurosawa with a disco ball. This is the number one contender for the Cruiserweight title, okay? And it beats Kurosawa, which, you know, to say it wasn't unique would be a lie. You know, it was a unique finish. It was cool. I liked
it.
DDP wrestled Scotty Riggs, beat him. But as he's, like, coming out, like, he's, like, shaking down everybody. You know, there's, like, a camera guy, you know. He, like, asked the referee if the ref took it, you know. And, you know, just he asked, then Mean Gene interviews him, and DDP even asked Mean Gene if Mean Gene took it. Just a goofy but great storyline. It's awesome. Greg Valentine wrestles Randy Savage. Yes, July 1st, 1986, Greg Valentine wrestles Randy Savage. Their rematch from, what was it, WrestleMania 4, did they wrestle? I think it was.
Yeah, the tournament. You can tell they're just signing anybody at this time.
Yeah, they're signing anybody, you know. You know, this rematch, it was, you know, some 9 years in the making, was epic. He beat him 5 minutes. And Greg Valentine came up with my Hollywood Blonde theme music. And Macho Man, once again, was wearing the Sting face paint. And then the Giant beat John Tenta. And, you know, it was...
And this is when they
did an interview. They talked about their match with, you know, Arn Anderson and Benoit coming up. And then...
They announced the Carson City Silver Dollars match with the dollars, silver dollars on a pole. You got two 400-pounders, you give them a pole match.
Yes, yes, on a pole. This was this was Vince Russo's debut in WCW. I'm just joking. All right.
Also during the show, you remember the Outsiders showed up with ringside seats.
Yes, they were sitting there. And, like, they were so hilarious, too, because they have popcorn, and they're drinking sodas. And then, Doug Dillinger wanted to, you know, kick them out, but, hey, they bought tickets, so they could have done whatever they wanted.
And they were so, they were, like, so cool about this. I mean, they were awesome. It's not even like they were heels.
It was awesome.
They did a thing during the show where, you know, they came out from ringside and they were like around ringside. They, you know, they were over the barricades and then like a bunch of guys from WCW came out and then Luger Singh and Savage came out with their face paint on. And Kevin Nash says, "Look at the clowns! Look at the clowns!"
Yes, yes. Look at the clowns. But I mean, this was like a big deal because I mean, even the Dungeon of Doom were coming out. You know,
yeah. I mean, you had babyface and heel side by side.
They were all there. They were all ready to go, too. They were all side by side, and it was like, you'd never see anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
It was awesome. So let's go to the Bash of the Beach, okay?
We got this great main event of the Four Horsemen beat the Renegade, Joe Gomez, and the Rock and Roll Express. Okay, we can go to the Bash of the Beach now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. They had one of those, like, live main events, you know?
Yeah. I always love the main event for pay-per-views because, you know, you get another live hour of wrestling.
Yes, it was. I mean, that's what it was, you know? The Steiners beat Harlem Heat by DQ, which is funny. Like, when you think of these matches, they didn't have time for the pay-per-view, but they put them on the main event. And some of the stuff that did make the pay-per-view. Just,
yeah, we got
DDP
and Hacksaw and Tate Fish matches, but no room for the Steiners and the Harlem Heat. And Sherry came back in this match and interfered.
Yes.
So they're still doing that, you know, that relationship with Colonel Parker and Sister Sherry.
Yes. Bobby Walker beat Billy Kidman. The Rock and Roll Express beat Scott Norton and Ice Train in about 2 minutes. And this is when you knew that it was the death of that tag team.
Well, they were starting. This is where they were starting to break them up. And, you know, they were eventually Norton was going to turn on Ice Train.
Yes. Yes, this was. And this match actually got cut from the pay-per-view. Eddie Guerrero beat Lord Steven Regal because they didn't think the work rate was going to be good enough, and they wanted to make room for it so they could put on Mongo McMichael versus Joe Gomez, you know.
And remember, at this time, Eric Bischoff was missing. Nobody had seen Eric Bischoff. He had been missing all day.
He had been... Because they had these seeds. They planted these seeds for the NWO. People can say what they want about the NWO, but it was very well booked at first.
Oh yeah.
At first. So let's start with the show. The commentary group, which Bischoff was doing commentary for most of these shows, you know. But this show had Shivani, Bobby Heenan and Dusty Rhodes on commentary. And there's a couple shows that had this commentary team too, but this was the one where they were really, truly great. They were really, truly great as an announced team. Just because Shivani was trying to be the straight guy, straight-ish guy. Bobby Heenan is the heel, you know, always rooting for the heel. And Dusty Rhodes is just fucking crazy. And, you know, adding his Dusty stuff to the show. So it's just so great.
All I remember on this show was at the beginning of it, they did the shot with the announcers. And Dusty has, like, this – looks like this big red leather jacket on. And Tony says – and something happens, and Tony says, are we all going to be able to get along here? And Bobby Heenan says, well, it's hard to get along when one guy's dressed like a recliner.
There's this one thing that I'll probably forget about, so I'm going to talk about this right now while we're discussing Dusty Rhodes. There's one Nitro that I always call the screw up Nitro, and we'll get there. It's actually it's not till next year, 1997 in August. It was the one where Luger won the title from Hogan. It was right the week before Road Wild.
The 3 hour show.
This is a 3 hour show. And there's so many messed up funny things on the show. And the very first funny thing on that show is the pyro was going off, you know? And it's going off behind the announcers and you just hear Dusty go, oh my God, my coat's on fire. Just like out of nowhere. And like you know, you hear somebody like, what? And, like, you hear nothing after that. Nothing.
I don't think Dusty was commentating
like,
Nitro, though.
What?
I don't think Dusty was commentating Nitro.
Then was it a pay-per-view then?
Might have been a pay-per-view.
I remember
Dusty was just doing pay-per-views on Saturday night.
So maybe it wasn't the screwed-up Nitro. I don't know. We'll get back to that then. But, yeah, next year... when we get to that screw-up Nitro, I have tons and tons of little funny things that happen on that show that people can watch back and they will laugh their asses off because it's crazy. All right, now this show opens up. Bash of the Beach, July 7th, Ocean Center, Daytona Beach. Rey Mysterio versus Psychosis. And this is Psychosis, this is his debut, right?
Well, he was at that clash in January against Conan, but this was Yeah, this was in his, I guess you could say, his re-debut.
Yes, yes, he hadn't been back since.
And this match was awesome.
What?
This was the best match on the show.
That was the match. It was the best match on the show.
This match was so great.
There's people that say, like, the best opening match show of all time, a lot of people say it was Bret versus Owen at WrestleMania 10. I think this is just as good, if not better, because this match was just, it was so good. It was so good.
Yeah, I mean, they were, I love that Hurricanrana into the pin that Ray was doing this time. It was like, it was so weird looking. Like, it wasn't even like a human being doing it.
No.
I mean,
it looked like a video game.
Yeah, it looked like a video game, exactly. And, you know, they had to have great time to do stuff like that.
They definitely did. John Tenta beat Big Bubba in a Carson City Silver Dollar match on a pole because what happened was Jimmy Hart climbed up the pole. And the thing that Bob was talking about is how Jimmy Hart did it. Dude had to be 60 years old at this time, you know, because he's 3 years past death now. I mean, how old is Jimmy Hart? He's got to be like 90. He's very, very old.
He's got to
be
like 70, but he still looks like he's, I don't know, like 40 years old or 30 years old or something.
Jimmy Hart has not aged, honest to God, since 1985. I mean, he looks exactly the same. I mean, exactly the same. I mean, he still has the same fake-looking hair. Wow. Jimmy Hart is a miracle man. Well, he climbs up, and then he grabs the sock or whatever it is.
Well, he was probably the only one that could climb the pole.
Yes, yes. And Shivani would, like, you know, say, like, such gems as, like, you know, like, maybe they're just going to tip it over, like the pole, you know? You know, what else are they going to do? What else are they going to do? Well, Jimmy Hart comes down. He turns around, realizes that it's not Big Bubba that's up. It's John Tenta. He, like, freaks out, falls down. John Tenta takes the coins, knocks out Big Bubba. You know, they have to win. Then right after, like, another kind of goofy match, DDP, and this, I always thought this finish was awesome because DDP was such like a slimy heel, you know. So Jim Duggan is trying to tape his fist for some reason on the outside of the ring. Why, I have no idea. He just did. He's on the ring apron. And he's climbing back in, and he puts his leg over the rope, and his legs are split, you know, between the ropes. And DDP just kicks the rope into Hacksaw Duggan's dick, and of course he takes it like a champ. He's like, oh, and then hits him with a diamond cutter, beats him, and it was an awesome finish. It was really cool. And
we ever find out who stole Paige's ring?
Wasn't it Guerrero? I think it was just Eddie Guerrero.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it was. Okay, I don't quote me though.
And I'm pretty sure he had it at this show. DDP did.
I really don't remember. I honestly don't remember.
It don't matter anyway. Okay, next match.
Okay, let's go to the next match. Another awesome match, the double dog collar match between the Nasties and Public Enemy. They're going all around on this match, okay? And, like, it's the beach setting, you know? So, Dusty Rhodes in any of these matches, okay, you could count on laughing. Anytime there's a hardcore match, you can count on laughing the entire match because Dusty's laughing the whole match. He's just going to laugh the whole time about what they're doing. And, you know, they pin him on a shark or something. Like, they're trying to pin one of them on a shark. And Dusty thinks the thought of pinning someone on a shark to be the funniest thing that ever happened in his life. Do you remember that? How hard he was laughing about that?
Yeah.
Oh, so great. So great. He put him on the shark, baby! And he's just going nuts. You know, so this match, everybody should go out of their way to watch. The match was great, but that's not why you should watch it. You should watch it just for the Dusty commentary. Just so awesome. Dean Malenko and Disco Inferno.
They had a great match.
Disco Inferno was so great in this match. And it's so great because he's beating Dean Malenko. And he's, like, getting ready to beat him, you know. And then he just wants to dance. But he remembers, like, oh, shit, I can't.
He's either getting ready to dance or he's, like, messing with his hair or something like that.
Yes. Oh.
But this was a really good match, if I remember.
It was awesome. Mongo McMichael in his first singles match beat Joe Gomez.
This match was horrible.
So bad, because they should have given him, like, Brad Armstrong. Because Brad Armstrong can make you look good. Joe Gomez will make you look bad. It's a bad match. Oh, it's horrible. Flair beat Conan. the return of the high-heeled shoe.
I just remember in this match, there was a spot where I think Elizabeth had the referee, and Flair was down, and then woman just enters the ring and kicks him right in the nuts, and Dusty Rhodes says, "She kicked him low." I thought that was so funny.
Oh, Dusty. All right. Then the Giant Kevin Sullivan beat Arn Anderson and Benoit. And, like, this match was booked so weird because they had that stipulation about the, you know, they'd get a title shot and all that stuff. And you would think, you know, because the Giant gets chased back, you know, because he's following Mongo McMichael. So then Benoit and Arn Anderson are double teaming Kevin Sullivan, you know. But the Giant just comes back and beats Arn Anderson with a choke slam. And then he carries, like, all right, Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam 1992 carries Sensational Sherry with her ass in the air back to the ring at Wembley Stadium. I'll never forget. At Wembley Stadium after he wrestled the model. The Giants at Best of the Beast 96 carries old fat Kevin Sullivan that same way back to the backstage area. And it's just so funny how that happened. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. And where after the match was where woman came out to try to get Benoit from beating up Kevin Sullivan anymore.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where this started.
And Benoit was kind of angry. You know, she even asked, you know.
Yeah, because she was with the Horsemen. And so, yeah, I didn't know that they were, like, married.
No one knew, but they were also trying to blend this real stuff in there. So, you know, you're trying to get all this stuff in there, and they wanted everybody to know. And then the main event. The main event is Sting, Lex Luger, and Randy Savage against Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. Okay? All right, so for no reason, like, there's a reason. They come out with only the two guys, and everybody's so angry. Like, where's the third man? This isn't fair. This isn't fair that we have to have this 3-on-2 advantage. You know, the announcers are going nuts. You know, this isn't fair, blah, blah, blah. Well, about a minute into the match, or a couple minutes, whatever, Luger, like, Kevin Nash is, like, you know, beating up Lex Luger, and Lex Luger's under Kevin Nash, and Sting does a Stinger Splash, and Luger's caught in between, you know? So he falls to the ground, and they take him out by the stretcher, you know? And so it's 2-on-2 now. And they're like, well, you know, what if someone else comes out? You know, why don't we have another person come out? Screw the rules, says Tony Schiavone. Why? You know, why not? Send someone else out there. Of course, no one comes out. You know, why
remember
not?
Remember at the beginning of the match, I think Sting and Hall were like the first two in the ring, and Hall just takes his toothpick and puts it right at Sting's face. And again, Dusty Rhodes, he says, Stinger, go over there and punch him in the nose. And Stinger went over there and punched him right in the nose.
It was great. But the reason they did this with Luger is because, okay, so they have the match, and they're having a hell of a match, too. I mean, they're Sting and
they couldn't have the advantage over – they couldn't have the two guys have the advantage over three.
Yes, yep. Yes. So
that's why they had to get one of them out of there.
Yeah. Well, then also for when, so all this is going on, you know, and then finally they have this advantage, and the Outsiders, they currently have the advantage, you know. They do. And Macho Man's laid out, Sting's on the ground all beat up. Well, then all of a sudden Hulk Hogan comes out. And you think, because before they were asking for someone to come out, you know.
Yeah.
So Hogan comes out.
And we've not seen Hogan in months.
What?
I said we had not seen Hogan in months.
We have not seen him since Uncensored.
Like,
a couple weeks after he teamed up with the Booty Man.
Yeah, a couple times
on Nitros. There's a few times. But then we had heard that he had that phone call and he wanted to be in the hat, you know. Well, so Hogan comes out, and they're like, yeah, here comes the Hulkster to save the day. This is going to be great. And then Bobby Heenan, who's always great on commentary, but I always thought it was a mistake, says, like, you know, well, whose side is he on? And Shabani's like, what? You know, because, like, that kind of, you know.
They kind of hurt the overall impact of what it was about to do.
Yes, I thought it did. And
because it kind of gave it away.
Yeah, I thought it did. Yeah, it was just, you know, I never really liked that. I thought it was...
In fact, I'll play this little clip of the Hogan turn right here.
Hulkamania! Hulk Hogan is there! Hulk Hogan's here! Hulk Hogan is in the building!
You're damn right he is!
Go get him, Hulkster!
Damn, on whose side is he on?
What are you talking about?
Whose side is he on?
What are you talking about?
Yes, sir!
Get him, Hogan! Go get him, baby!
Come on and get some of this now!
Who's there now, boys?
Hulk Hogan arrived! Hulk!
What is he doing?
My God!
Is he the third man?
He's the third man!
What the hell is going on here?
Hulk Hogan has betrayed WCW! He is the third man!
Look at
this picture!
Oh, my God!
What the hell is going on?
Oh, my God!
Are you kidding me?
Probably the lowest shot ever given to professional wrestling. That man did right there, Hulk Hogan.
Let's get everybody out of the dressing room right now and kick his rear end.
Unbelievable, brother.
What have I been saying all these years? How? What have I been saying all these years?
Oh my God.
A career of a lifetime. Right down the drain, kid. I hope you love it.
Can you
see those little soul to the devil?
See those little Hulksters with the tears rolling down their face right now?
We are not going to even acknowledge that three count.
Now what happens to us? What happens now to WCW?
There was no three count. I never thought I would say that he's yellow, but he may be wearing red, but he's wearing red and yellow.
All right, we have seen the end of Hulkamania. For Bobby the Brain Heenan, for Dusty Rhodes, Gene Okerlund, I don't know. I'm Tony Schiavone. Hulk Hogan, you can go to hell. We're out of here. Straight to hell.
That Schiavone makes me laugh so hard with everything he says. Just the way he's like, he may wear red and yellow, but he's wearing red and yellow. Like, he's so angry that Hulk Hogan turned. And
I never heard an announcer tell somebody to go to hell before on the air. You know,
yes,
like that?
Yes.
And that was so
awesome.
Yeah,
no one had ever done that before. Because he betrayed WCW as a whole. And it was such a big deal, such a great thing, because no one expected Hogan to turn heel. I mean, when they were announcing, like, the third man's coming, did Hogan even – did you think it would be him?
No, I didn't think it would be him at all. I mean, I know it was at the time, you know, like some of the sheets are speculating on it, but, you know, I didn't have access to that, so I wouldn't have known. So I was like shocked when I saw it.
It was very shocking.
And then the promo
shocking.
Afterwards was so awesome. Best promo. I mean, he says, you know, I came from a big organization up north, and who knows more about that organization than me? And it all makes sense when you think about it.
Yes, and he says, like, things like, you know, if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan coming to WCW, Eric Bischoff would still be selling meat from a meat truck. in the back of a truck in Minneapolis, which is just awesome. And Bischoff is still, you don't know where he's at, you know? So now the NWO.
And I think a fan hit the ring during this. And I think Scott Hall beat him down. And the fans were just.
Yeah,
they've been waiting for years to boo this fucker. And they were just throwing trash and shit. And then drinks were hitting the guys in the head and stuff like that.
Yeah, you never saw, like, I mean, actual, you know, like, Scott Hall got hit in the face with a drink and just used it to slick back his hair. You know, he slicked back his hair with, you know, Diet Pepsi or whatever.
And Kevin Nash is standing there and, like, drinks are, like, bouncing off his back and stuff. I mean, it looked like a daggum, it looked like a landfill at the end there.
But, I mean, like, just think of, like, how much heat they had. No one had that much heat in wrestling at all, nowhere near that level of heat. It was so good.
And you could see Gene Oakland want to get the fuck out of there with all those crazy fans throwing all that shit. He also had one of the best lines. He sounded like Hogan's dad, and like Hogan did something wrong when he was a kid. He said, "Look at all this crap in this ring." I thought that was so awesome.
It was definitely great. So now next week we're gonna return again. The NWO has officially invaded WCW. I know we took 2 hours to talk about 2 months worth of TV, maybe a month and a half. But this stuff we had to cover in such detail because it was so important. And, you know, anybody that's a fan of this time, you know, you would want us to cover it, you know, this in depth because it's that important. So next week we're going to talk about, you know, Hog Wild. You know, we'll get to Hog Wild. We'll get to Fall Brawl, most likely, and all the stuff that's leading up with the NWO and how people are joining and you know like the whole invasion thing and how it shaped WCW to its core and just how great it was. And you know, so everybody should really listen next week, of course, too, because. You know, this is honestly like, this is a time that people were watching WCW, and this was the best time to watch WCW. So, let's go ahead and end the show here, because you know we only have a couple minutes left. So yeah, let's go ahead and end it here. We appreciate everybody that listened, everybody that downloads the show, of course. And next week, like I said, we'll be talking about the Road Wild and you know, everybody's reaction at WCW after Hogan turned. And, you know, we're going to start right off with that Nitro, the July 8th Nitro from Disney MGM that next night. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you want to listen to all the backup shows that we've had, the, you know, the archives and stuff, go to superfriendsuniverse.com. For Contreras, this is Sinbad. See you guys later.